Nigel.
Hi, Trina.
Morning, how are you?
Not too bad, thank you very much.
Good stuff.
Given the early hour it is for most actors. I'm just kidding.
Here we go. He's one of these divas complaining already and we haven't even started.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh,
what
God,
can you do with him?
He'd be having a tantrum now, Nigel.
No, actually, I'm an early riser, actually, so it's fine. It's fine. just kidding you.
Yeah. Nigel, you're coming to town. You're coming to Dublin very soon.
Yeah.
Tell me all.
The last time I was there was, my God, 20 years ago.
What?
No, more than 20 years ago. 25 years ago with Wuthering Heights.
Have you not even come for a visit or anything? Did we scare you away?
You scared me away. I liked it that much. I haven't been back since 30 years. No, actually, that's not true. I've been over for a couple of telly things, you know, like sort of panel shows and things like that. But certainly not for about 15 years or so, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. You are not going to recognise this city when you do come. It has changed so much.
Really?
All the buildings everywhere. And yeah, you won't know it.
Yeah. Oh, the Irish tax laws, you see. There are all these companies, you know, Google and so on. So, more power to your elbow, you know.
Yeah. Well, you are coming for Roddy Doyle's The Commitments at the Three Olympia Theatre there. And it's running the Dublin one is between the 7th and the 18th of February. But this show is going along. It's quite a long tour, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. It started in September in London and then we took it out to the cities outside, you know, Portsmouth, Sheffield, Bradford, and then we finished off the last leg of the tour before restarting in Scotland, where it was really, I don't know if it was a Celtic connection or what, but it really kind of took off and captured the imagination up there, especially in Edinburgh and Glasgow. We were playing to nearly 3,000 people per show in Edinburgh, and you know, the audience not only came but they lapped it up. You know, they loved the comedy, they loved the story, and of course they loved the music, you know.
Yeah,
so it was great. And then we've had 4 weeks off, thankfully, and we're back in London now.
Just when you caught your breath, you were back out at it again. So tell me this much, is it played out like a musical, or is it played out where there's, you know, normal dialogue and then the song's thrown in?
It's an interesting question. It's structured as a play, I suppose, you know, with a narrative with a beginning, a middle and end. It tells a story as it did in the novel, you know, following the novel and following the kind of most of the action in the film and stuff like that. You get the songs on that journey, if you see what I mean, as the band is coming together, forming together and they're rehearsing. They start very badly, you know, wrong notes and so on and so forth. Guitar strings breaking and all that, and then you see the progression of the band getting better to becoming really quite, you know, really quite accomplished, and so you follow that narrative arc. Then you've got the end of that comes in, and then it becomes what really basically I can only describe as a concert, because you know it's like I suppose what the opera terms are called a reprise, where you kind of get a revision of a lot of the songs, and it's basically the story goes out the window then. It's the play's finished. You get basically a concert of about four or five songs.
This sounds great.
Which has everybody up in the aisles, you know, rocking and rolling, really.
Because we know all the songs. I mean, I remember when this movie came out and the sound, I think every household had a copy of the soundtrack as well. We know the songs inside out. That must make it easier to sell bums on seats when people know exactly what they're going to get.
Listen, I think there's no doubt about it that, you know, a big part of the selling point is the fact that there's these great classic Motown numbers in there, you know. Midnight Hour and Knock on Wood and all the rest of it.
Which, ride, Sally,
you know,
ride.
That one as well. Yeah, Mustang Sally. Yeah, but you know, they've been around for the age of these songs, and we sort of almost take them for granted because of that much sort of, you know, interwoven in most people. You know, into part of people's kind of cultural and musical history, you know. So absolutely, the music is definitely a strong point of the piece.
So you're playing Jimmy Rabbit's Da, which is the part that was played by Colm Meaney in the movie. So tell me, do you have to do is it a Dublin accent, or can you use your own accent for this?
You'll have to judge on the night. It's an attempt at one, so you know, as close as I can get it. You know,
give us your best.
And I'm sure there'll be detractors. I've been very helped and very blessed by the fact that something like 75% of the cast are Irish, you know, local Irish born, and actually, you know, based in Ireland even. So they've been a good reference point for the accent, you know.
Good.
I have to say, you know, you can be the judge in Dublin, but I have to say that people who, Irish people have come to see it in England, have said they didn't know who was from Ireland and who was not, you know, who were the Anglos and who were the Irish. These were sort of people, I said to the director who told me this, he said, I said, well, surely they would have, no. He said, no, they were quite young, these guys, and they didn't watch you and they didn't know you from Coronation Street at all, so they had no idea that you were an Irish. So that's a big compliment, you know.
Oh, very good. Very
good. I hope I can live up to that in Dublin, for goodness sake.
Yeah, no pressure now, no pressure. Come here, can we have a preview, will you?
Yeah.
You do a little bit of Dublin there for me, and I'll tell
you
that. Go on, Nigel.
Not at this time of the morning, you're kidding me.
There he is, being a diva again. It's funny there how you mentioned...
Self-protection, that is.
The young ones, you were saying there about they didn't recognise you because they didn't know you from Coronation Street.
Yeah.
That's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
That makes me feel about 102, because obviously Terry Duckworth, I mean, anyone listening to this show today will be very familiar with Terry Duckworth and your role in Coronation Street. The audience that come, you're going to get people like looking for your autograph and everything around Dublin. You won't be able to walk down the street, you'll be recognised.
Well, that's reassuring to know, actually. That's really nice. You know, I say it's amazing the kind of the longevity of it. I mean, the last time I did the show was 10 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
Strong storyline, albeit, but still, you know. And you see, the other thing is, I don't know if it happens in England, in Ireland as well, but in England, or in the UK rather, they repeat tranches of episodes. You never get away from the damn thing, you know. But it's nice. It's nice to be remembered, you know. It's nice to think, well, I left a bit of a footprint there, you know, and the character was such that, you know, it's one that stays in the mind, you know.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
He was
jipping in and out, making poor old Jack and Vera's life a misery, but didn't Vera just love the bones of him? He could do no wrong until, yeah.
That's right, you know. Yeah,
he did some awful
things.
But,
you know, just to make you feel old, you know, the first time I joined as a regular before I decided to leave, in 1983...
Yeah.
In 1983,
yeah.
God, that ages us, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So,
but I was watching it. I was watching it back then.
But then again, some of the I take strength from the fact that a lot of the songs in the show are at least 50 years older than me. So that's good. No, not quite 50. You're 20 years older than
me. Yeah, so you're only a young fella.
It's not so bad.
Come here, just on Coronation Street. When you went for Coronation Street, is it true that you were originally going for the part of Curly Watts?
That's right.
They
introduced this new character, and they saw a lot of you know, young actors from. And I was in the London stage at the time, and I went and they said, "Oh, very good, very well read." And for 3 weeks, I was being dangled on the end of a string. You know, have I got the part? Have I not got the part? And then the phone call came. Sorry, Nigel, it's not going to work this time. You know, from my agent, and of course I was crestfallen.
Mm.
But what happened was they saw so many what they thought were, you know, good young actors for the part of Curly. They decided, instead of giving the Duckworths a daughter, which they were going to do, they thought, let's give the Duckworths a son instead.
Yeah.
And he can pal out with Curly. And so Sharon Duckworth became Terry Duckworth, so to speak.
That's actually brilliant.
And the cast around. Yeah. And the cast.
That's actually, when you think of it, that's actually genius,
because
Vera, with her only son, the way she would have just pandered to him and, you know, never seen any wrong. Whereas if that
was
a daughter, it might not have worked as well.
Exactly. Mm. So, and it was, at the time, I think it was thought of, well, we've seen so many good actors and it would be great, you give something for Curly to do.
Mm.
Because I think everybody in the show at that time was 101 or something, you know what I mean? And there's this young character, Curly, you know, who was like 22 or whatever, and he, you know, he would have a pal, he'd have somebody to knock about with, and then came on the back of that, then came Kevin Webster in the garage.
Yeah.
So, you know, so
I still remember the episode so well, Nigel. Do you remember the one where Kevin and Sally met for the first time? I think she crashed into his car or something like that. I actually still remember that, and talking about it in school.
Yeah, amazing how certain episodes and certain scenes from shows like that stay in your mind.
Yeah.
I can remember when I was growing up, I can remember certain scenes from the 60s from Coronation Street. You know, it has a very powerful presence in our collective culture, really. Yeah.
Finally,
and it's amazing that it transferred to Ireland as well, so successfully.
Just huge in Ireland.
Yeah.
Every household watched Coronation Street. And I was only at a funeral there recently, actually. The mother of one of my colleagues passed away. And in the when they were doing, you know, the mass about her, they were saying how when they were what's the word I'm looking for when they were doing the is it the eulogy? They said
eulogy.
They were talking about how you needn't even think about phoning her up when Coronation Street was on because she would not talk to you, not a hope of talking to you.
Yeah.
You could be saying the house is on fire. Don't care. I'm not talking now. Coronation Street is on, and I think that was so many people were laughing their heads off because they were like, "That was my household growing up as well." You could not ring your mother when Carrie was on.
Yeah, and I wonder what that's about. I say, you know, I mean, it's probably somebody should do a PhD thesis on it at some point. You know, you know, is that about the fact that there's that kind of identification because it's in the Northwest? Was a big Irish contingent, you know, both in Manchester and Liverpool. Was it about that? Was it about the fact that it's working class? I don't know, you know. It's,
yeah,
it's very
yeah.
interesting to find
I
out.
I think so, what, yeah, the down-to-earth kind of thing, yeah.
Common denominator, common denominator, you know.
Yeah, because do you know what it was? It wasn't as depressing as EastEnders, which was the rival then, and I think that was 85 that kicked off. They had more kind of depressing storylines where Carrie was the normal day-to-day things that go on in life. But the auditioning as an actor then, like throughout your career, did you get to a point where it was, this is easy, or is every audition kind of daunting?
It depends how much you want the part, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you want the part, if you're desperate for to do the part because you think it's a great part or because you need the money, then it can be, sometimes you kind of waltz in and, well, no, I never waltz in, you always treat it professionally, but you know what I mean? With a little less investment in wanting the part or not. So I suppose it depends on your situation and what the part is, to a degree. I've never good at auditions, really. I don't think, you know, and I think a lot of actors would say the same. And now auditions are almost a thing of the past. I auditioned for this part, mind you, but auditions are a thing of the past because you do all the, now that the game is self-tapes. They send you a script from a film or from a TV show or whatever and say, could you read the part of what it? And it's bizarre because they assume, the casting people now assume that, you know, you've got somebody there that can read in the other part for you, you know what I mean? You know, can hold a camera at the same time. And you find yourself, you know, setting up like a mini studio in your front room. And you ever remember those Tommy Cooper sketches where he had one half of him dressed as a sailor and the other half of him dressed as a prostitute or the woman, you know?
Yeah,
he's kind of, he can't make it up.
That's really testing your acting skills where you have to be both characters.
Testing your blooming balancing skills half the time, I tell you. Camera in one hand, standing in one spot another time and then a changing position. Oh, my God.
But
so
in other ways,
you don't do that many auditions at the moment. You know,
in other ways, not
in the old style, anyway.
It could be better for people because they'll only send on the tape where they do a really good audition and the nerves aren't there. So, you know, you're a journalist as well, though, right?
Yeah, well, no, there is that. And there's a fact that you can get to a wider audience if you cut down all the travelling and all that, you know, to an audition and stuff like that. But I don't know. It's not for me, that, really. I mean, I didn't like the old audition as well, the process. But this is something a bit, you know, they, a lot of the time they put too many demands on you, you know, in terms of trying to create the atmosphere and the veracity of the scene. You know, it's not so bad if you've got a little bit of a monologue to camera. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But when you've got two or three interlopers in the dialogue, you know, it's a nightmare. It's a living nightmare. But you know, you have it to do. So, that's the way it's gone now. For somebody like me, a dinosaur like me, who only switched on a computer about 20 years ago for the first time. All these different platforms that you've got to get your head around. It's a nightmare.
But you're a journalist as well, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I had to get somehow savvy, you know, with technology to a degree, you know.
How do you do that?
Well, I went to university, didn't I? I thought university. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, no, I just meant time-wise, how do you get to do both?
Ah, well, this is really, I've been a journalist, actually, for, 15 years since I've been a card-carrying NUJ member working on everything from local papers to international papers, nationals like the Sunday Mirror, the Daily Mirror, Express, and internationals, and the BBC as well, and internationals like Die Zeit. For 15 years, but for a whole tranche of reasons, I started to come back into the business. I started to miss the business a little bit, and was encouraged to come back into the business about 4 years ago. So I've only really been back in show business for 4 years properly. Yeah. I started to do some radio and now this theatre job. So. Yeah, so that's how I've been doing it, you know. But I certainly hope to, as much as I've enjoyed coming back into the theatre and into show business, I really hope to continue, you know, being a jobbing journalist as well, you know.
Yeah, no,
so,
it's nice to have the option to do both.
I want to have my cake and eat, you know, so why not? You know?
There's so many people, actually, Nigel.
I'm so sorry to jump in. We actually need to go to the next interview now. We're on quite a tight schedule. I'm so
just
sorry.
Just having a lovely chat.
That's all right.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay, Emma. You just ruined our lives, Emma. It's fine. Okay, we'll just wrap up really quickly.
Yeah.
Nigel, we will see you when you're here in Dublin at the 3 Olympia, the 7th until the 18th of February. And the best of luck. Have a great time.
I'm very grateful to you. Thanks so much. I'm looking forward to it.
See you now. Bye-bye. It's Something for the Weekend on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.